was September the 20th, 1982. An advertising billboard along Route 22, Whitehall Township, the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. The billboard became the temporary perching place, or home, to three men participating in a radio promotional contest. It lasted a menacing 261 days. The reward was an $18,000 mobile home for the person who stayed the longest through snowstorm, cold weather, and a moment in life seldom recorded. The event, indeed the story, became internationally known 36 years ago, and now veteran filmmaker Zeke Zelker brings to the screen the economic struggles of the 1980s. Zelker, who wrote, directed, and produced Billboard, an inspired rendition of the actual occurrences of that 1982 event. The film premieres at Civic Theater in Allentown November 1st at 7 p.m. at the 19th Street Theater. But that's not all. We chat about the film, the premiere, the plans for multi-platform media events, such as a virtual radio station and 25-episode web series, a live stage performance, and an international release. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we chat today with renowned filmmaker and Lehigh Valley artist, Zeke Zelker. He shares with us many projects surrounding his film, Billboard. What a pleasure to have you with us, Zeke.
Thank you for having me.
It's fascinating to me that there's so much, you know, at the core of it is Billboard, and there's so much activity around it, so much going on, there's so much to talk about. But just to back up for a moment, with the incident George was describing, the actual historical incident of the Billboard and the three contestants, we were talking a bit before the show, and you said that, you know, really, in essence, that was the inspiration kind of through your memory as a young boy.
Absolutely.
And could you talk a little bit about how that morphed into what is now Billboard?
Sure. So my story is in current day. And I remember just driving by there back in 82 as a kid and wondering not only what the heck they're doing up on a billboard, but also, too, is a matter of, like, who was behind the scenes kind of, like, orchestrating this entire thing. With my family background and everything else, I've always been more interested in the backstory and the inner workings of things than I was actually the spectacle itself. From what I feel is that the spectacle is generally like the plastic, and what really drives it is the backstory of what make things happen. It's also an interesting way of exploring things, too, is because not many times do people actually think about, like, okay, Big Brother, what's going on behind the scenes? What would happen if they turned the cameras 180 and saw all the crew members working on this, and what's the true drama of actually producing something of such a spectacle?
Interesting. So it seems to me, from the little bit I've seen, a bit of trailers and a little bit of film, thus the role of the radio station in Billboard. For it seems to be the radio station, the folks at the radio station, are the beginning of that backstory. And how did that morph for you? What's that story about for you?
Sure. So I don't know the first thing about radio, I'll be very honest. It's been a learning process. Early on, what I started to do was I started to go into various radio stations and observe world-renowned DJs and seeing, like, how it works and everything else to breathe authenticity into the story. And so the backbone of Billboard, the film, is about the radio station that hosts the contest. What's it like to be an independent radio station up against the behemoths of corporate radio? The struggles that you have as an entrepreneur trying to succeed. And also at the same time of, you know, Casey, the lead character in the film, is also trying to maintain his father's legacy, who is a stuntman. He was like the radio stunt guy, you know, creating all these zany kinds of contests and everything else, all to improve ratings. And so that's something that's missing in today's society. I very strongly feel that radio is personal. It should be localized. And that, you know, because only can you have good radio should be authentic to where it is. It shouldn't be broadcast out of central USA.
Yeah. Interesting. So the radio station that attempt to stay alive, in essence, in its community and to keep a father's legacy alive. So it sounds like there's also a story about fathers and sons and family and community that's at the heart of this as well, the universal element, perhaps.
There is, absolutely. It's a very complex story wrapped in the spectacle of a radio station hosting the Billboard State Contest. It is a story about entrepreneurism. It's a story of father and son. It's a story of community and also about news cycles. So you have to realize, like, you know, think about it. You know, Michael just hit, you know, the Gulf Coast and all the devastation. How much is it in the press anymore? And it's sad because you literally had lives lost because of this. And that's what's just sad, is like, it's just like, it seems like everything is a news cycle instead of breathing any sort of longevity into anything of significance.
It's interesting to know that, and I just want to share this with our listeners, that you are the son of a preacher woman.
Yes.
And of course, in the entertainment business, you worked as a clown peddling balloons in an amusement park. And that's because the amusement park was owned by your great-grandfather?
My great-grandfather started the park. At that point, when I was selling balloons, it was actually by one of my uncles. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people have worn clown makeup on asphalt with about 200 Mylar balloons shining on you of how hot that is. and so I learned lessons very young. And it's true, it's just like being the family. We were all the worker bees. We never had any sort of you know, economic stake in the park. We just had to work there since we were 12 years old.
And of course, the amusement park is very well known to all of us, I'm sure.
It is, yes.
And you were in John Waters' film Hairspray.
Yes, I was actually cast as a dancer. As when I was a youngster, I was into acting and everything else, but I always ended up getting cast because I could dance. Much to the chagrin of my daughters, who think I can't dance at all. But I still love it anyway. And so it was funny. I was just at Westchester earlier today promoting the film because we're going around the state having state preview screenings that will happen in November. And my first ballet class was actually there because my dad never let me took ballet growing up because it wasn't for men.
Right.
And little, you know, my first exposure to ballet was actually watching Brishnikov once he immigrated from Russia at the age of 7, watching him on the Saratoga stage, you know, being surrounded by these beautiful women and jumping. It was just like an amazing, amazing, you know, it's just amazing to see. And that's what my love for ballet started.
I always like to ask the filmmakers, when was the first time that you actually had a camera in your hand and you started shooting? When was that first time that you really found out that you are a filmmaker without actually knowing that you could do it?
Right. Well, it's funny because I actually came late to the party. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't until I was in my mid-20s. I always thought I was going to end up on Wall Street. And in my early career, I was like analyzing entertainment stocks to Merrill Lynch. And so, but what's interesting about it is I had a friend that knew about my entertainment background with Dwayne Park, knew that I was in finance, and be like, you would be one heck of a producer. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing of what a film producer did. He was at NYU Film School at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I started to learn about filmmaking, and I fell in love with it. I literally fell in love with it. And I risked everything to do what I do. Talked my way into grad school at Syracuse. And then after my showing up in first film, my professor's like, what the heck are you doing here? Go make films just like John Waters. Mm-hmm. Little did she know I was in Hairspray. So every film, I actually thank her. And when I came back to the area, and I came back here intentionally because I wanted to make a difference, because people just were bashing Allentown outside the area. And I have a lot of family pride, and hence why I've got pride for the area. And I refinanced the only asset that I had, which was a Jeep Wrangler. And I refinanced my Jeep, got $12,000, and started my company.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Amazing.
And you've been here ever since?
I've been here ever since, making films.
That commitment.
And it was, what's interesting, too, is that, you know, now I'm the filmmaker from Allentown. Yeah. You know, when I'm in L.A. or New York or at Sundance or whatever, it's like I'm not a New Yorker. I'm not from L.A. I'm from Allentown. And that also has actually been good for me. You know, so it also separates me from the pack.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting because when you're talking about, you open it November 1st and you're running through November 10th at Civic with the newly renovated, fabulous Civic Theater. But then you're taking the film around to what I call the PA Proud Tour for screenings. And there seems to be, and it talks, your website talks a lot about product placement of famous Heinz, Harris, Martin guitars. The sense that this is a really a Pennsylvania story, and that there is a kind of, not homage, a connection and honesty about that. Why is it a Pennsylvania story to you?
Oh, sure. So one is, as a filmmaker, you want to be authentic, at least the kind of films that I create. And so ever since I started creating, I've always thought about the idea of product placement. And quite honestly, I attribute it to the days of Dorney Park when I heard my uncle negotiating the syrup contracts between Pepsi and Coca-Cola, and it was all based off of who was going to give them the most free stuff. That's literally what it, because we were talking like the same numbers and everything else and so forth. So it came down to what they got out of it. And so, but also too, is like, because of all my films have been pretty much, not all of them, but the films that I've directed and wrote have all been pretty much based in Pennsylvania. So I try and be as authentic as possible, thus putting in Pennsylvania-made products.
Yeah.
Now, when I produced Loggerheads, I did the same thing. That was based in North Carolina, and I used the same recipe using North Carolina-created produced products. So, like, there is a bit of authenticity when you do that. And I have a lot of pride for PA, just basically because I love the geography of it. I love the seasons. I love so much about it. And literally, it's because my family has been here since 1884.
And what about Billboard feels like a Pennsylvania store to you? I mean, I would venture my own guesses, but I'm curious.
Well, there's some idiosyncrasies in it, which is completely purposeful. Also, chose to show off the seasons. We shot the film over the course of 9 months. We shot the bulk of it over the course of 4 weeks, but then I wanted the different seasons because the seasons are very important to storytelling, especially when you're telling a story over a certain amount of time. You can't just say it's December. You need to see that it's December. Mm-hmm. So we literally shot in some of the worst snowstorms. mind you, I would not let my crew go out with me. I shot a lot of that stuff myself. And my wife thought I was completely insane wearing everybody else is off the streets and I'm blazing down 22 alone. But it was just a matter of it's a matter of authenticity to me, and people in Pennsylvania are very authentic, and it's a matter of they don't really pretend to be something that they're not, and you have to love them or leave them, quite honestly.
Inside and backside of the movies, the actual set of the billboard was at Rothrock.
It was.
And we noticed it every time we drove by, and we thought, wow, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about some of the technical challenges, things like that. Because people don't think. It's much like, what if you turned the cameras around on Lost? What were some of the challenges with filming something in the sky like that?
Sure.
Billboard sitters.
Yeah. So we built the set in Rothrock parking lot, and they were just an awesome, awesome people to work with. And also for them to literally let me do what I did there and had a set in their sales lot for almost 13 months. But what people don't realize is that the platform of where the billboard sitters basically resided on was, I think at its lowest point, it was 6.5 feet and the highest point was almost 10. And so, but not only do you shoot up to that angle so it feels like it's higher up, but you also have to raise all the gear, lighting, cameras, everything else to be able to be level with them because you don't always want to be shooting up on somebody. Yeah. And so that was a challenge, so it was a lot of rigging. So then when the winds would come through, then all of a sudden you have to bear everything down. And the one thing that I wasn't expecting was when we were there for the web series shoot, they were replacing all the high utility lines.
All this
beeping, everything else, and I kind of talked to the gentleman very kindly after I flipped out a couple of times. But I asked them, "Is there anything you can do?" And he literally just pulled all the backup beepers at all of their trucks for me. So just that's the kind of fun Amazing. Thing you have. It's like if you're honest with them and be very forthright and be like, "Hey, listen, can you make this happen?" People will try and help you.
Mm-hmm. You describe it as a transmedia journey, really. There's when we get back to all the things going on around it, you mentioned the web series. So let's start with that, the web series. How is it different than the film? How's the story different?
Sure. So the web series focuses solely on the four people in the billboard sitting contest, where the film focuses on the radio station. And then we also created the radio station virtually called WTYT960.com.
We're chatting with artist and filmmaker Lehigh Valley's Zeke Zelker on his new film, Billboard. And we're very excited. When we come back, we're going to talk about his other films, and he may even share with us an idea of what he's projecting in the next in the next year. Okay, we'll be right back right after this.
WDIY is proud to partner with ArtsQuest, presenting Wild Adriatic, Thursday, October 25th at 7:30 p.m., doors open at 7. Rooted in the spirit of rock and roll, Wild Adriatic plays a combination of groove, grit, and guitar. For information, 610-332-3378 or artsquest.org.
We're chatting with Zeke Zelker, filmmaker and artist from the Lehigh Valley, and his new film, Billboard, is opening November 1st at Civic Theater.
We were talking about the web series a little bit before, which is, as well as the film that's opening over at Civic Theater, the web series will be online. You were talking about it being, the focus is a bit more on the contestants, the characters themselves.
It is. And so we actually, so what we're doing is we're telling two different sides of the story. The web series focuses on the four people living on the billboard, and we very rarely actually leave that. And so what the storyline is that it is a solar-powered feed, live feed of the Billboard Seating Contest. And so that's going to start being released on February 1st, leading up to the release of the film nationally. That's going to be happening, I believe it's April 5th. Mm-hmm. And so I always found it very interesting that, you know, like, again, from my amusement park background, it's kind of like creating story worlds, just not linear storylines. And so creating the web series gave me another ability to tell a different side of the story. And then the film focuses solely on the radio station. Okay. An interesting thing about that, too, is the very first thing we did was we actually created a radio station, WTYT 960, where there's bands from all over the world that have submitted to us. We're in 22 countries, 49 states, and if anybody has any friends that have bands in South Dakota, it's the only state that we're not in right now.
Oh, no.
But it's been fun because like there's over 1,000 bands, and it's interesting because it exponentiates the market and audience that we have. So when that we get into the marketing phase of the project, we then have an audience base.
Interesting. And so is the sneak preview tour in some ways, how is that different and why is that precede the formal release nationally? Is that part of a marketory exploration? Or?
Yeah. So what we're doing is I've been what I call into story R&D since I started the project. What's going to work, what's not going to work. And so we're also taking that same sort of DNA into the marketing aspect of it as well. So we're trying to figure out on what's going to work and what's not going to work when we then market the film in April. I'm trying to be very diligent, and I'm trying to realize that, you know, to market a film nationally costs a considerable amount of money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I have a fiduciary and fiscal responsibility to those people that are supporting me, and also, too, as we could still use more support, mind you, that we're doing this very, very smartly and very deliberately. So what we're doing right now is we're showing it in different places in around the state that have completely different markets. Like we're, you know, just in Westchester. Now, the challenge with Westchester is that it's so close to Philadelphia that they don't have their own media at all. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're trying to find anomalies in the marketplace. Like, for instance, another place we're going to be is in Lewisburg. There's nothing around Lewisburg. And so like kind of like how do you market to a small town? Mm-hmm. Then we're going to be in Philadelphia, which is its own set of parameters. Then we're also going to be in Lancaster, which is very similar to Allentown area, from what we're gathering. We'll be there tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is we're literally putting boots on the ground to learn about what the market is so that it's genuine and so that's authentic. And we're kind of taking the same sort of formula that we when we go nationally, that we are authentic to that location, that our marketing is authentic to that location, and that we do things that we can have genuine buy-in into what we're doing.
Interesting. Thinking about the music, too, we had been talking about casting earlier a bit, too, and you mentioned that Eric Roberts, who's one of the leads, was drawn. He's a big independent music fan and blah, blah, blah. The music was part of the hook for Eric.
It was, and it's funny because like people ask, how'd you get Eric Roberts? I'm like, well, he submitted. And that's a funny thing. It's like you know, big actors, if you have a quality product that they want to be a part of, they will literally want to be a part of it for whatever it will take. Mm-hmm. And that's what's just kind of cool about creating something that people are gravitating towards. I've always been a big fan of Leo Fitzpatrick, who was in the movie Kids as Telly. Then also Heather Morazzo, who was in Welcome to the Dollhouse and Princess Diaries. I've been fans of theirs since they were quite honestly kids. And I was pretty much a kid still, too. And to have them a part of the cast was very much an honor. Then John Robinson, who's the lead, was the lead in Elephant and also Lords of Dogtown. And he also has a very, like, you know, deep earnestness to him. And, you know, he just did an amazing, amazing job with it. So it's always interesting of, like, when you create something, you don't know whether or not people are going to gravitate towards it. And thankfully, we've created something that have. And mind you, we were on a very, very minimal budget. Yes, we did spend money on it and things, but we didn't spend, you know, enormous amount of money. We paid everybody that was associated with it, you know, and that sort. And so it's always interesting to see on what people gravitate towards.
You also have Oakes Fagley, who is a star unto himself at this point.
Yes.
And his father, Michael.
Yes. Yeah. Oakes is actually in, he actually is in a flashback sequence for the web series. And of course, Mike is actually in both the web series and also the film. Mm-hmm. So the people that are in the web series are also the four people in the billboard in the film.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. And videos. Did the videos play a part in the auditioning, I believe you said?
Yeah. So what we did is we created a contest online where people can create their own video to audition for us. But what they had to do was they had to stay within the story world, where they would have to create a video stating why they'd be a great Billboard City contestant. And we literally cast based off of that. We had about, I think, 190 different submissions, a ton of votes for it and everything else. And that's also then plays into the storyline of the film. And so it's always fun because I believe in what we call audience co-creation, where we enable the audience to be a part of the story because then they have deeper buy-in. It also then adds another level of creativity to it. Like, for instance, all the bands that were on this in the radio station, we then are going to be using some of the music for the soundtrack for the film and the web series.
Okay.
Right. Some of your other films, very briefly, Affairs, 1997, also known as It's a Wily World, 2003, and In Search Of in 2008, but also in Pandemic with the Sundance in 2011.
Sure. Yeah. So actually, Pandemic was the first transmedia project at Sundance. Mm-hmm. And I produced that for a gentleman named Lance Wheeler, who's an amazing creative. And we also learned a lot what works, what doesn't work. We got very, very technical with that project. And quite honestly, we learned more from our failures than we did our successes. And I'm bringing that same sort of mentality into what I'm doing now. Like, just like how, like, you know, you hear about these startup companies and everything else of like, you know, pivoting and things. And I'm taking that whole kind of startup mentality to filmmaking and learning and trying to listen. You know, the biggest challenge with artists is like when you get criticism, you kind of shrivel up and be like, why don't people like what I'm doing? To me, I actually take it as a learning experience of, okay, what can I do better next time?
Yes.
Or how can I change things around to be better? Mm-hmm. And so I take it not necessarily as a thumb in the eye, but actually as a learning experience. I'm constantly learning. You know, like I learned a bunch from a class at Westchester today. That's just the way it is, you know, so.
It's constant.
Yeah. It's constant, yeah, yeah.
But the
yeah.
consistent thing is I Dream Machine.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you, are there any projects upcoming that you can tell us about right here exclusively on Lehigh Valley Arts Salon?
Sure. So there's actually two different projects I'm working on. Okay. One is also based off of a Lehigh Valley story, which is called Adventure on a Dare, which is about a gentleman named Fritz Sprandl who was bet a dime to take a canoe from the shores of Jersey to the shores of California through the Panama Canal.
Oh, wow.
And then my other project that I'm working on is a project called Love Decide. That is my version of a love story where the lead character falls in love with a dancer in a ballet called Love Decide, which I wrote, and how you basically takes time to trust and then to fall in love. And that story we're going to be shooting primarily here, but then there's exteriors and things we'll have to shoot in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my next big project, and so we're going to start pretty much positioning that and start to raise capital for that then too.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the stage for there's this just to back up a little bit too. Again, I'm intrigued by the transmedia element of all this. A stage production is also going to be part of the Billboard journey. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. So what we did is when we first started doing the web series, we did a bunch of tests. And then upon observing those tests, I started to realize, oh, my gosh, I could stage this thing. And so we created an interactive play that is more so based on the storyline of the web series than it is the film. But where the audience can interact with the characters via social media. We did it for one night only at State Theater to test it to see if it would even work. And then we actually did a run at the Bucks County Playhouse. And our plan is to possibly tour that later next year after the film comes out once we get some sort of notoriety for it. But the interesting thing is, it's like I'm sure the listeners are probably overwhelmed by all the different facets of what we're doing. But it is all very succinct. It's all very clean. And all you have to do is remember this. A radio station, WTYT 960, creates a billboard sitting contest. The film focuses solely on the radio station hosting the contest, and then the web series focuses purely on the four people living on the billboard. And so those are kind of like the core elements, but then the play is obviously another aspect of it because it's always fun to learn from a live audience. That's one of the reasons why I have a lot of respect towards, you know, theaters, directors, and so forth, is because like you get instant gratification, instant knowledge, what's working, what's not working, a lot different than film.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Please, everyone, Billboard, November 1st through
November 10th.
Thank you. 7 p.m. at Civic Theater, 527 North 19th Street in Allentown. You can look them up at civictheater.com, or you could go to Zeke's Elker page as well.
Yeah, a Billboard movie. Yeah. I would suggest if anybody wants to find out more information about the film, it's at billboardmovie.com and then also on our Billboard movie on Facebook and also Instagram because we keep people up to date on what we're doing there as well.
Great. Very good. Special thanks to our technical engineer, Steve Aronson, who provides our listening audience with clear, concise audio modulation. Next year, he claims, will be his filmmaking project, premiering, highlighting Voices on the Radio. Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
Got any advice for me?
This is WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, where you'll always find many choices, real voices. It's been a pleasure, Zeke.
Yes,
please come back.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you.